Because we don't want to think about it until we have to. Like, we don't want to, we don't want to think about death until you die, you know?
and the problem with that, Sean, is that when you come to the table, now you're making an emotional decision as opposed to a logical one. If you do it in advance, at least you have the opportunity to make these decisions in times of peace, and you can make, you know, and you can make sound decisions.
You're listening to Sean Henry's Becoming, a podcast that focuses on the emotional journey of an entrepreneur from the thought of their business to the execution and beyond. I am your host, Sean Henry, a serial entrepreneur, speaker, real estate investor, landlord, 21-year retired Army veteran, and author of When the Bank Says No. I'm sitting down with entrepreneurs to talk about their processes and the lessons they've learned along the way. Fasten your seatbelts. The journey is rough, but rewarding.
Because last night, I was shipping a body. I had three bodies I had to ship out, and they canceled two flights. And then I found out after the flights got canceled that my full-time embalmer is in ICU with corona.
So what are you doing to protect yourself?
Well, you know, as an embalmer, we've always just kind of followed universal precautions, which I guess we can touch on that once we start with the podcast, too, if it comes up. But we've always done that because we just know about COVID now. We don't know what they weren't telling us last year or 2 years ago, you know what I'm saying? Or every like 3 to 4 years, it's something. But as a health, you know, we're not healthcare, but healthcare and embalmers, you're supposed to follow the universal precaution. That is to protect yourself as if somebody has the bubonic plague and you just don't know about it because you don't know.
Okay. Oh, wow. Whew. Yeah, well, my prayers to him and your staff for sure, because definitely, especially since nobody knows what's going on, we don't want anybody else to catch this. So when he got it, he realized it immediately, or well, you said he's in intensive care.
Yeah, he realized that he felt like he had it, and the problem is they would not give him the test. He had a hard time getting the test because he didn't exhibit like all of the symptoms, maybe like 2 out of 3 or whatnot. He was like, just go home. If you still feel ill in 2 or 3 days, come back. And so he came back, and then they'll find, they're like, no, you still don't have all the symptoms. So he kept going from hospital to hospital until somebody, you know, agreed to test him. And once they did, they sent him to ICU.
That's crazy.
Yep.
So me telling you that I have these symptoms isn't enough. I don't think anybody wants to have it. You know?
Exactly.
Wow, that's crazy. Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining us for another episode of Sean Henry's Becoming. I am your host, Sean Henry, and today we have a very, very interesting guest with us today. His name is Sir Jordan. And he is in the funeral services. Unfortunately, with the COVID-19 or the coronavirus happening right now, his services may be needed more than ever at this time. But we will get into all of that. Good morning, Sir Jordan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, doing very well. So thank you for joining us, or thank you for allowing us to spotlight you this morning on our show. So I really appreciate that.
No problem. Hello to everyone that's listening as well.
Good. So we're going to get right into it. So we always start with asking our guests a little bit about their background. Where did you grow up, or where are you from?
Okay. I am born and raised. I am a proud native of Decatur, Georgia. For those you don't know, that city is about 15 minutes east of the city of Atlanta. We produced Olympic track stars such as Dwight Phillips, Terrence Tremell, and former Dallas Cowboy quarterback Quincy Carter, as well as a lot of other people, such as Chris Tucker and people like that. But I'm a very proud native of Decatur.
Okay. And they like to say Decatur where it's greater, right? Are they still saying that now?
That's how you know that somebody is not from
Okay, I'm not from Atlanta, so when I got to Atlanta in 05, that's what I heard. Decatur where it's greater. So I was like, okay.
It's kind of like getting off the plane and saying, hey, I'm in Hotlanta. You know, nobody here says that.
Okay, well, thank you. So for those who are visiting and you want to know how to stand out, there you go. Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have an older brother named Terrence, and I have a younger sister named Joy, both of whom, you know, I like to say I'm the runt of the family. You know, Terrence went to DeVry. My sister was tested as gifted and went to the University of Georgia. And, you know, I decided to just become Undertaker.
Okay, so well, let's get into that. Did you grow up in an entrepreneurial household?
Not really, no. Actually, I grew up in a working class household, and and the entrepreneur aspect didn't come until years of seasoning in my field. And I gained enough experience, and one day I just kind of woke up, and we'll touch on that, where I was just like, wait a minute, I could do this.
Okay, so well, let's talk about that. When did you know that you wanted to get into funeral service?
That occurred around the age of 8 years old. I don't know, you know, I know I went to a couple of funerals. Unfortunately, my aunt and uncle passed at that time on my dad's side. And I don't know if I was inspired or encouraged, whatever you want to call it, while freaking my mom out in the process. But when I was 8, I said, I want to be an undertaker. And I told her about it. And I think she thought that I would grow out of it. Obviously, I did not. And so around the age of 12, 13, I shared that with my grandmother. That's what I wanted to be. And she was like, are you sure? I was like, absolutely I am. And she said, good. So we got in the car and she took me to the local funeral director, which was Mr. James Stocks, who operates a business in Kirkwood, Atlanta. So we went into his office and we spoke. Well, we talked. We had a conversation for about 15, 20 minutes. And he said, look, son, because I was so excited, he said, you cannot be dropping out of school, hanging out at the funeral home. And I was like, no. I know I'm going to finish school. I will finish. But I was just that excited. So my grandmother is the one who nurtured that. And then, unfortunately, my grandmother and grandfather did not live to see me join the profession. However, before their passing, their wishes were that their money go towards educating me so that I could obtain the proper credentials. And for those who don't know, yes, we have to have credentials. You have to have a degree in mortuary science. You have to pass a national board exam, a state board exam, as well as serve an 18-month apprenticeship in the state of Georgia. That apprenticeship varies depending on the state where you choose to practice in. And after completing all of those, you don't have a right to get a license. You just have the minimum requirements to apply for a license.
Wow. So even after being educated and doing the apprenticeship, you don't have a right. So you don't automatically be deemed able to practice.
No, you have to apply, and the state board will grant you that privilege if they see fit. I mean, I would say probably 90-95% of the time you will get your license if you meet the criteria, but there are some things that could affect that decision, such as questionable character, you know, crimes or moral turpitude, as they like to say.
Oh, that makes sense. They don't want people's bodies being disgraced in their last moments, I would think.
Well, especially in the wake of, we had a very horrible case that took place in Georgia about 20 years ago in the tri-state area, where a gentleman was not cremating bodies like he was paid and promised to do so. And it resulted in a lot of families being traumatized. And I would say, and those families go beyond the families that he was serving. The entire state, if not the Southeast, is traumatized, because I worked in the crematory for 4 years. And I could say, and this was in the maybe around 2015, 2014 to 2019, somewhere around there. Every single day that I was there, I had to answer for that man's actions, because years later, people are still traumatized.
Wow. So what questions would they ask?
Can we see the crematory? How do I know that I would get my loved one's ashes or cremated remains back? What is your process?
Wow. Because I think I remember hearing something about that. So he wasn't doing anything with the bodies. Is that correct?
What he was doing was tossing them out back on his property and giving people back like concrete, ground up concrete.
So did they ever find out why he was doing that? Like, what was the purpose of that?
Little known fact, no one ever found out. There's a lot of speculation, but he did not go on record and explain his actions.
Okay. Yeah, I do remember hearing a little bit about that. It was horrible. But wouldn't that be a normal question, I think, for family members to ask? Because how would you know?
All right. So before that, no. After that, yes, it gave everybody, including lawmakers, something to think about, because also another little known fact is he didn't do a whole lot of time because the laws just weren't on the books at that time. So he was convicted of a lot of misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this, and I hate to give this analogy, but when you set your trash out in your front yard and the trash man comes to pick it up, no one ever asks, where does it go? You don't know if they're taking it to a landfill or if they're taking it to the next neighborhood and just dumping it in the cul-de-sac. You don't
That's
know.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Very few people ask those questions. So you assume, you know, if I pay someone to do something, or, you know, they say they're going to embalm my loved one or cremate my loved one, before that, you really didn't have a reason to question their integrity.
That's very true. So was he, and I've pulled up the story. So if anybody wants to do their research on it, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on him because this is about you. But on CNN.com, it's man arrested after bodies found near a crematory. And this happened in February 17th, 2002 in Noble, Georgia. So if anybody wants to do further research, they definitely can. But he was the son of the crematory.
Absolutely.
Wow. So he definitely knew better. Do you think there was a case of a mental illness there, possibly?
I think that in every profession, you just have good apples and bad apples.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that good apples outweigh the bad apples overwhelmingly. However, it's the bad apples that stick out in people's minds that we remember. I don't know his mental state. I don't know why he chose to act unethically. It's just very unfortunate. And it did cast a dark shadow over my industry.
It really has. Yeah, I do remember hearing about that at that during that time. So that was sad, and definitely for the families that experienced it, and like you said, the ones that remember it, because now they're asking that question to this day.
And he was an entrepreneur.
Wow. Well, yeah, it was his family's business, right?
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay. So in funeral service, you're a trade embalmer. Okay. So explain what that is.
All right, so what that means is there are firms that cannot or will not pay a full-time embalmer. So if your caseload For the purposes of this discussion, we'll just say high volume funeral homes will serve about 350 or more families. So if you're serving less than that, and certainly in today's time where the cremation rate is roughly around 50% in the state of Georgia, a firm just may not be able to afford to pay a salary for someone to sit around the clock waiting on someone to pass away. So what happens is they will pay an embalmer as they need one.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I do, I wear a couple of hats in the industry, is I market my skill set to different firms.
So it's almost like you're a freelance embalmer.
Correct.
Huh. Okay. So that could be another stream of revenue for anyone who's looking into getting into the funeral services.
Absolutely. That is one stream. Correct.
Okay. Wow. So that means you could work for several different funeral homes if you want.
Correct. That's correct.
Oh, okay. So let me ask you. So I grew up, my family's from Mississippi. So, and of course I have my grandmother, she's currently 92. So I know about the whole, we talk about the burial and cremation and stuff like that. So cremation wasn't really, it was kind of frowned upon. I remember when I spoke with her about it, like why you want to be burned, you know? Mm-hmm. And my whole thing was, it's just easy, you know,
right.
Kind of just do it and be done with it, right?
Yep.
So what do you see the differences in people wanting to, whether it's the actual person or their families, what's the feelings behind traditional burial and being cremated?
All right, great. So that's a perfect segue into my second business, New Leaf. I don't know if you was ready to talk about that, but here we are. a lot of people are choosing cremation over traditional funerals and burials. And traditional funeral burial just means where you view the deceased during an elaborate ceremony, which we will call a funeral, followed by burial in a cemetery. People are choosing cremation now that we found that it's not because they lack the financial resources. It's because people no longer value the price of a funeral. So in the Black community, we'll say if we find out that someone is cremating, we automatically assume, hey, they must didn't have any insurance. You know, they didn't have any money. I'll say this. I actually took care of a family that spent $700 on a cremation and turn around and spent about $10,000 to $11,000 on obituaries throughout the United States of America.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they spent more on the program, per se, than the printout of the program.
Well, it wasn't
then,
the program. It just went in different newspapers.
Yeah. Wow. So this person, people must really needed everyone to know that this person had died.
Well, this particular, yes, to answer your question, correct. This particular mm-hmm. family valued the written word as opposed to a traditional funeral.
Okay. So it's just basically on what the family, or if the person has spelled it out in their will, mm-hmm. what their values are.
Correct. And so that's why we have the rate. And like you said, initially, it's efficient and it's affordable too, but it's efficient. And the other thing is cremation gives you more options than a traditional burial. So what I mean by that is you have the burial and everybody go home. Well, after you collect yourself a couple months later or weeks later, whatnot, you have a place to go visit. Well, that place is where your loved one is going to be, unless you want to pay thousands of dollars to have them move. But if you were to take a job and move across the country, your loved one is still at that cemetery versus cremation. Your loved one now becomes mobile. You can scatter them in their favorite places all across the globe. You can get their ashes tattooed on you. You can make that a part of your ink. You can still bear the ashes or a portion of the ashes in, you know, somewhere else. You can plant them into a tree. You can also
shoot them in, place them in fireworks. So those, when your neighbor's shooting fireworks on the 4th of July, you, you know, you just think that they're shooting fireworks, but they could be shooting their grandmother across your house. So that's how New Leaf was born. And that's, it was a company that I started with a business partner where we primarily focused on electronic communication because people wanted something that was efficient and also affordable.
So electronic communication, such as what, how does that relate to
the internet, email? How does it work? Well, it works mm-hmm. this way. You know, nowadays, how it's always been, someone passes away, first thing people want to do is come to the funeral home, sit around the table, cry on the undertaker's shoulder, you know, take 2 or 3 hours. And then at some point in that conference, you walk into a big room full of caskets. And to some people, it's terrifying or it's something that they just don't want. Well, New Leaf was started to take you out of the funeral home and place you back in an environment that's comfortable for you, i.e. your home or your office. Or if you just happen to be vacationing across Europe at that time, you can communicate with your funeral director electronically and arrange for the services of your loved one and save thousands of dollars in the process.
Okay, so I'm going to ask maybe a dumb question.
Sure.
Yeah, that sounds like something that we would be doing in 2020.
Absolutely.
Are we not doing that? Does everything have to happen in a funeral home?
No. And we're finding out with the recent pandemic that you don't want everything happening in a funeral home, and it's forcing my profession to think outside the box. The problem is the funeral industry is conservative. It's a conservative field. This is a field where we don't want people having any visible tattoos. We want women wearing as less makeup as possible. We want our men to dress in suit and ties versus where millennials don't want to wear suit and ties. Millennials don't want to interrupt their day to come and talk to you because they know that there are many platforms where we can communicate without having to ever physically shake hands.
Right. And we don't have to do all of this in person.
So if you are a business owner, and it's just not the funeral business, if you are a business owner and you've built a successful enterprise over the based on the traditional way of conducting funerals, it would be very hard for you to embrace change. And we've seen this happen with the Blockbusters of the world, you know, the Circuit Cities of the world, that if you don't embrace change, it could be to your detriment.
But with this industry, I mean, because people are dying and we're born and we're going to die.
Correct.
So is that a reason why they can be a little reluctant to change and stick with tradition?
Yeah. And I mean, they're sticking to a formula that has worked. So, you know, Michael Jordan won 6 championships. If you all of a sudden tell Michael Jordan to alter his diet or to do X, Y, and Z, you know, he may say, I mean, what I'm doing is working, you know, for example. But what entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs need to familiarize themselves with is the SWOT analysis. Is SWOT, right. SWOT is S-W-O-T, it's an abbreviation, and it stands for the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's a quadrant that you have to be honest. It doesn't work if you're not going to be honest with yourself. So in that, you get to assess your business. It's a concise overview of your business's strategic situation. So you get to list your strengths. And if some of those strengths could be, we embrace technology, or, you know, we're the only business within the 50-mile radius, whatever the case may be. And then you get to talk about the opportunities, you know, the untapped market potential, favorable shift in industry dynamics. And that favorable shift could be going toward an electronic platform. You need to address your weaknesses. And this is, when I've taught classes on how to do SWOT, and I ask people to turn it in initially, this is the area that has very little or no bullet points in it. And that's a problem, because people are not being honest about their weaknesses. And that's the quickest way to be a statistic, a business that doesn't last, you know, beyond a certain time frame. But you could have a poorly planned strategy, limited innovation capacity, inadequate facilities, distribution problems, you know, insufficient marketing skills. And you just need to be honest about that. So if technology is something you don't embrace, you don't understand, that would be a weakness. It doesn't mean that you're incapable of running a business. It's just a weakness, and you should turn it into an opportunity. And then the last one is threats. That's where you get to talk about your competitors, sales, shipping, and substitute products, slow market growth, et cetera, et cetera.
So I can see how a SWOT analysis would be difficult, especially if you don't know the weaknesses of that industry. Like, so speaking of, since we're talking about your industry, sure. if I've been doing this, or my family's been doing this for 50 years and we've done it this certain way, how do I determine that this is a weakness?
And if you're the only game in town, what we find is some of my colleagues who operate a business in rural areas, a rural area may be the only option for about 3 or 4 counties. Why would it be necessary to change if you have no competitors? And your customers may not have access to the technology.
So it's only a weakness if the people that you're servicing know another way or communicate a different way.
Correct. So you can have 2 funeral homes, and their SWOT analysis should look completely different, because it is it's customized to your particular firm's strategic situation. So it may not be necessary for one business to transform or incorporate electronic communication versus a firm that operates in the city or an urban area. It may be to their detriment, where you have a large, you know, and let me say this, the millennials are not the bill payers right now. The millennials are not necessarily in high positions, executive positions right now. The Generation X is. However, millennials are the ones helping their grandparents, because we know that the baby boomers are still living. And my business, my industry, we embrace for the hit of the baby boomers, and it didn't happen. It hasn't happened yet, because they're still living. But they're assisting grandma and grandpa with funeral arrangements, and those millennials want to conduct business electronically.
But can you explain the process? So what things should people have in place prior to utilizing your services? And then also, for someone who does not do the due diligence to have the pre-arrangements, what takes place once a person has passed?
Great question. And if you don't already podcast, where I get a pen and paper, because this is where a lot of information I'll say will become valuable to you. All right, so what happens is, and I just talk while people are getting their notes together, is we tend to react. Americans, we tend to react instead of prepare. And it sounds like your grandmother did a wonderful job in preparing. When I am meeting with people who have not prepared, it's so obvious. And I'm always left wondering, when you all get together for 4th of July, Thanksgiving as a family, what are you all talking about? Is it how bad the Falcons suck? Is it, you know, the state of the political climate? I mean, what do you, because there's some basic things that we're going to need you to know about your family member that I can't help you with. And some of those things are, what is the person's name? You know, believe it or not, people often get stuck when I just simply ask, what's the middle name? What was grandmother's, and in your case, I'm not even going to say your grandmother, what is your mother's maiden name? You know, because I don't know if your mother may have had several marriages or if they speak to each other. I don't know. Then we're going to need to know the social security number, date of birth, place of birth, not even the hospital. I'm not even going to throw you a curveball. I just need you to tell me the state where they were born. Address helps. And the person who passed away, I'll need to know their parents' name, the father and the mother, not the mother's. I'll need to know her maiden name. That catches people a lot. So it's things like that that we'll need to know. And if I don't have that information, I can't fill out certain documents and get permits, and that would delay the processing of your death certificate, which you'll need if you happen to have an insurance policy. Now, let's get back to the planning stage. We buy car insurance for what? In the event that we get in a car accident, in the event that someone hits me, steals my car, and burn it up. We get renter's insurance for what? In case my apartment floods. We buy home insurance for the same reason, in the event of. Well, death is not just in case or in the event of. That is a foregone conclusion. And that's something that we don't buy insurance for, and you absolutely can. What funeral homes have done, what the industry has done, is accept insurance policies to assist you. But ladies and gentlemen, that is not what the insurance policy is for. The insurance policy is designed to replace the deceased lost income. That's what it's for. Now, as a courtesy, I can accept that, and you receive less than the face amount based on what we contract for at the funeral. That's not what that policy is for. There is insurance out there that is specifically for your funeral or your cremation. And the beautiful thing about those policies is it's similar to a car loan. Once you pay it off, you're done with it. You don't pay on it for 20 and 30 years. You know, I've seen where people pay $50 a month or $100 a month for 30, 40 years for a policy that's worth $2,000-$3,000. Like the insurance.
That is my grandmother. My grandmother has a policy. I'm like, she has, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but she has a policy that I think is like $5,000 that she has been paying on for so. I'm like, Grandma, I could have cut you a check. Like, absolutely. I don't understand this. Absolutely. Like, I could have cut you a check when I was in high school. You know what I'm saying? And like continued to pay. And I'm, But if she cancels that policy, she loses that money that she has. And I'm just like, this is insane.
It's insane. And that's the way policies were written years ago. Nowadays, there are some other insurance products out there. If you're going to go the life insurance route, where you can get a term policy. Some people may find it necessary to do a whole life policy. And I won't spend the talk into insurance, but the products are out there, just like pre-need insurance. Pre-need insurance is for funerals. So what that looks like is...
You're saying pre-need, P-R-E-N-E-E-D?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So what that looks like is you walk into a funeral home, you make your selections that day. I like the black casket. I want 3 limousines. I want a chapel service. You know, I want this particular flyer. You go through all of that. I'll need X amount of death certificates. And so your contract, we'll just say about $10,000, you know, just to keep it even. The average funeral is less, but we'll just say 10,000. Maybe you was feeling it that day. Want to splurge a little bit on your casket. And you begin making your payments. Your payments are not made to the funeral home because we know what? Funeral homes can't go out of business. The state insurance commissioner does not allow you to make payments to a funeral home in most situations. You pay an insurance company. And there are a lot of companies out there. So they're the ones who are holding your fund. So when you want to follow up about your policy, you'll call the insurance company. And funeral homes, they will probably beat me up if they knew that I was telling you this. But when you contract with this funeral home, you can take that policy to another funeral home. Now, the difference is, and I'm talking about the state of Georgia, that contract is based on the firm's, the company's prices, who you contract it with. So the funeral home you go to, they don't necessarily have to honor those prices. Now, they will more than likely, but they don't have to. But that policy can be transferred to another funeral home because it's like having a credit. You walking in with $10,000 worth of credit.
Wow. Okay. So that's like the difference between going from a Walmart to a Target. So if I have a gift card, say I have a Visa gift card and I go to a Walmart funeral home and I say, okay, I picked out all my stuff. And then maybe I don't really like the customer service at Walmart's funeral home, even though I've already put the package together. And then I say, oh, I'm gonna go over here to Target's funeral home because I love the customer service over there.
Right.
Their prices can be different for the same exact situation. I still need someone to direct the funeral. I still need a casket. Correct. Their prices can be different.
Absolutely. I mean, I was having a conversation last night. I went to Publix. Publix was closed. One of the shoppers said, hey, go to Kroger. They're right up the street. We had a conversation in the parking lot about the difference between Publix and Kroger. And I'm not going to tell you which one I prefer because neither one of those companies are paying me to say anything positive.
Well, you started at Publix, so I'm going to assume you prefer Publix. Okay.
Well, it could have been out of convenience. But we had a conversation in the parking lot about the different prices. They do the same thing. They both sell groceries. They both sell produce. They both have a little bakery. They both sell flowers, but they have different prices. And funeral homes are at liberty to charge whatever price they find necessary.
So should someone shop around?
Absolutely. The point of this podcast, I don't know what people are getting out of it, but I think the number one thing they should learn is that they need to educate themselves.
Absolutely.
To get into business, educate yourself. Listen to Sean Here Is Becoming, to get exposed to different professions and entities and different philosophies, to educate yourself. And if the funeral industry is no different, you should educate yourself and talk to different businesses. And let me say this, this is the ultimate benefit to pre-planning means you're just writing it out, but pre-arranging, where you actually are financing it in advance, is you lock in the price of your funeral. So if you were to pay for it today in 2020, and we know, just like in every facet of America, that prices increase, inflation. And if someone passes away in 50 years, you still get that $10,000 funeral. Even in 50 years, if that same funeral is $24,000, you do not have to pay any more money.
So what if you, okay, so I like that you said that. My question is, what if you switch funeral homes? But hold that, because I didn't want to forget that. But you made a great point, because like I said, my grandmother has had she's had 8 children. So she's had a few of her children go with her to the funeral home to discuss her pre-arrangements. And one of her children tried to reduce some of the cost because she was still paying on this. And so they were trying to reduce one of the costs. And one thing my grandmother continues to tell me every time we talk about this, which is becoming more and more what word am I trying to use? Frequent than before. They were trying to reduce the cost of her casket, her child. And the funeral home service member said, you don't want to do that because the casket that she has at the time she locked in this price was X amount of dollars. Now that casket is, and I think it may have been an extra, I don't, let's just say an extra $2,000.
Right.
And I'm like, that is crazy. Like, you just think that, I don't know why we, okay, I don't know
something
why
don't
I
think
about. Absolutely, because we don't want to think about it until we have to. Like, we don't want to, we don't want to think about death until you die, you know?
and the problem with that, Sean, is that when you come to the table, now you're making an emotional decision as opposed to a logical one. If you do it in advance, at least you have the opportunity to make these decisions in times of peace, and you can make, you know, and you can make sound decisions.
So, okay, another question. Where do we get the pre-need insurance?
That would be, you would go to the funeral home of your choice, and you would ask for a pre-need counselor or tell them what you want to do. I imagine they would be more than willing to help you because, hey, even though they're not getting the funds, they are pretty much locking in a customer, because at that point, you're taking someone out of the shopping phase and they at least feel committed to you. Now, we know now, I gave you a little trade secret that you don't have to go to them, but for the most part, you are committed to them from that point on.
Okay.
All you have to do is go and have a conversation with them.
So, speaking from a millennial, since now I realize that's what they're calling me, but like you said, a hybrid is what I'm gonna stick with. How do I shop for funeral homes? I don't, that's not something, you know.
So it's not something that we're accustomed to doing. But what do? You go to, again, the funeral home of your choice. It could be out of convenience, such as last night, possibly. And you say, hey, tell me about the services that you offer. And then you ask them a candid question. What separates you from your competitor down the street? If they don't know the answer to that question, then we now know that you're in a business that haven't done the necessary research in order to sustain themselves, because every business owner should know their competitor inside and out. You should study your competitor more than you study yourself. The problem is we're egocentric. And we enter ourselves, hey, look at me. I have my LLC. Look at me. I have my state license. Look at me. You know, I just shipped the product to China, you know. But we don't study our competitor. And the competitor is probably studying you and know your weaknesses. But you ask them what separates themselves. And then you go and visit the competitor. And you ask them the same questions. A lot of it, people do business with people they like. So one of those will emerge as the leading candidate, because you will get a warm feeling. That's going to be the professional who took his time, answered your questions, didn't try to rush you off because you're not trying to schedule a service for this Saturday. And it could be the atmosphere. You know, maybe one funeral home is a lot more modern and progressive over the other. It could be based on price. I'm not a fan of going with the lowest bidder. I don't want to sell my loved ones or myself to the lowest bidder. I have a lot more pride in my loved ones than that. It could be that they're the lowest price, but I'm not going to base mine on that. Because, again, you know, you get what you pay for.
Very true. Wow. You are still vulnerable even in your last wishes, because people can, you could say you want one thing and people will do something completely different if you don't have this, your stuff prearranged.
Yeah. And so you bring up another excellent point. The decision that is made, the ultimate decision, I can't tell you the right or wrong way to go about doing it. But let's just say you have a husband and a wife, and one passes away. Whose decisions, whose wishes should be followed? Is it the deceased or is it the survivor? Because the survivor is the one who ultimately has to live with that loss. And so a lot of times when people are making those decisions, hey, this is what I want to happen to my body, you're not factoring in the grieving process of your survivor. But again, I'm not going to tell you which is the right way or the wrong way. Everyone has to make that decision on their own, but it is two ways to look at that.
That's an interesting point, because I would think, again, like I said, I have one child, and I would think you need to follow out my wishes and what it is that I want. But like you said, he's the one that actually has to do it. But family members have I don't want to, it's not survivor's remorse, but it's almost like they
Survivor's
wonder,
guilt.
guilt, right? Exactly. Well, would this person have wanted this way? Because the funeral I went to last year was a military burial. And I understand that those things are done for the family. So I'm kind of on the fence about that. I may put provisions in there. If I were to die this year, then maybe I want a military funeral, because I retired this year from the military. But if God sees fit that I can live an extra 20, 30, 40 years, I don't think I want a military burial during that time, because I'm so far removed from the military. And I don't want a big write-up in my obituary about me being in the military, because I feel like I have done more than that. I love servicing people, and to me, my military career was just a part of me servicing people. I think it would be less guilt on the family, especially if the person has taken the time to prearrange their last wishes to give that
Right. It
person what they
takes
want.
a lot of thinking out of it, because if all else fails, if two siblings can't make a decision on what to do with mom, mom has already laid it out. It's nothing to talk about. However, when you talk about, like, for you, for instance, there's one child of yours, and you've gone off and did all these great things, and the military was a microcosm of your life. Well, guess what? It may have been very influential in his life, because in 30, 40 years, he may say, if it wasn't for the military, my mom would not have set the example she set for me, which allowed him to become who he was. And he may want military honors based on his experience growing up, because remember, it wasn't just you who was in the military, he was in it as well.
When the bank says no, Airbnb hosting without owning the property. Read how one woman took a bank's rejection for financing and turned it into a lucrative Airbnb business without owning the property. Sean shares her step-by-step process from picking her niche market to furniture purchases, all which led her to achieving superhost status in her first 30 days of hosting with Airbnb. Learn how she made almost $20,000 in less than 7 months while still maintaining her full-time job. New hosts are often unsure of what they need to do, making Airbnb harder than it has to be. Follow her story of determination and perseverance, and learn how you can implement her practices in any of your entrepreneurial endeavors. Go to www.seanhenry.com. That's www.seanhenry to order your copy of When the Bank Says No, Airbnb Hosting Without Owning the Property.
Like, I'm just thinking, when I think about funerals, I almost kind of think about weddings. Like, it's a big ceremony that you're having, honoring, someone, and all of those things cost. So can you talk about just the cost, some of the costs of a funeral? Because, like, we were talking about pre-arrangements earlier. And so can you talk about some of the costs of a funeral?
Sure, definitely. Let's start with a cremation, and we'll call it a direct cremation, meaning there won't be a viewing or service. Currently, March 27, 2020, in the metropolitan Atlanta area, a direct cremation can range from $500 to maybe about $2,500. Again, and the price is just going to be the difference in quality or how that business perceives themselves. We know that there's a difference in the steak at IHOP versus the steak at Ruth Chris.
And
it's just that simple.
And I laugh because we know these things. However, it seems like the price would be the same for funeral homes. Like, it's just like, this is a funeral home, so this is the price of this fancy box and these beautiful flowers. Like, it's crazy that there's a difference in price.
It is. It's just the pay. It's based on the market where you are and what consumers drive the market. What you're willing to pay. Competition benefits the consumer. It's just that simple. For a traditional funeral where you're going to have a viewing, that can be anywhere from about $2,000 to $3,000 and up. We're just saying up.
And when you say a viewing,
you're talking about a viewing, you would have to more than likely. The remains would be embalmed, dressed, and casketed. There'd be a night of visitation prior to the funeral, and then you have the funeral the next day. So that's a lot of involvement with the deceased, where you're asking the funeral professional to do a lot of work there, so the cost would increase. That's why it looks different than a cremation. Oh. And you have the cemetery piece as well. To bury somebody, this is really what floors people. After we finish flooring them, whatever's left of them, they go to the cemetery and get their head knocked off. there are costs with the cemetery as well. Most of the time, the cemetery and the funeral home are separate charges. Some funeral homes own a cemetery. Most do not. So when you get to the cemetery, you have basically a real estate transaction. If you don't already have this set up, you have to purchase land at the cemetery. Once you purchase your land, you then have to pay, because we're talking about an at-need situation as opposed to pre-need, you would need to pay for them to open the grave. And of course, after it's open, it needs to be closed. So that's a price as well. The cemetery will more than likely require a vault that is usually it's concrete that the casket goes inside of, and the purpose is to keep the ground from sinking. And if you lived in Albany, Georgia, about 25, 30 years ago, you remember the great floods where caskets were coming up out of the ground. A vault would prevent that. So that's a price as well. And then you're talking about the marker or the headstone. That's an additional cost. So a cemetery, reasonably you can expect to pay with all of those things, marker included, about $3,500. I have seen cemetery bills which are in excess of $10,000.
Wow.
And it just depends on where you go.
Because that's your forever real estate.
In most cases, we do know that, that can be changed as well. But, you remember Monopoly?
Yeah.
You have the boardwalk, and then you have, land that just costs a little bit less. I can't think of some other property.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you shop funeral homes, shop cemeteries.
Yeah, Virginia Avenue.
There you go. I don't like how this cemetery maintained their land. I don't like where it is. The thought of me being buried next to the airport, I don't like that. It just depends on where it is.
Wow. So do you recommend someone looking for a funeral home, or could that be a plus for someone to find a funeral home that owns a cemetery as well when you're shopping around?
It's convenient.
Okay.
If you value convenience, then yes.
Most millennials value convenience.
Well, there you go. That's what we would call a one-stop shop.
Absolutely.
If you're price conscious, then you just have a few more steps in the process. That means you are, in addition to researching a funeral home, you have to find cemeteries that you would entertain doing business with.
Okay, so you described going into the ground. Now, I during my process of you know, shopping or getting my prearrangements, going into the ground wasn't something that I wanted to do. I like the and help me with the terminology. So the monuments that you literally walk up to, and
a mausoleum.
Okay, the mausoleum. So explain that process.
Oh, that's a beautiful process, as far as I'm concerned. That's just simply being you're interred above ground. And some cemeteries will have a building full of mausoleums, and some cemeteries will have what they'll just call a private estate, where you see people buried on ground, and then out of nowhere, you'll see a mausoleum above ground. And it's usually made of granite, concrete, stone. Price, it's a little bit more to do so, but the alternative is it's just a choice that people make. Some people, believe it or not, they can't bear the thought of being underground. They feel like they're going to suffocate as if they're breathing, but that's how they feel. And then other people say, I don't want to be in a mausoleum because of one good tornado and I'm blown in the middle of 285. It's not the reality, but you know, that's how people feel. You're gonna buy based on how you feel.
So they actually put the casket inside of the mausoleum?
That's correct. Yep.
Wow.
And if you're in the metro Atlanta area listening, I would encourage you to visit Westview Cemetery in Atlanta. They have what they call the Abbey. It's three stories of mausoleums. And this place was built in, I want to say, the late 1800s.
What's the name of it?
Westview Cemetery.
Westview Cemetery, okay.
You can also, I definitely encourage you to visit Oakland Cemetery. Not to sound morbid, but it makes one of the best dates you can go on in the fall. I say the fall just because I prefer the weather, but anytime. They're more than welcome. They'll welcome you there with open arms to do a tour. There's some great dining options in the vicinity of it, but it's like walking apart. And in both of those cemeteries, you have the... Now, Westview is not going to give you a tour. You're on your own, but Oakland would. But both of those places are going to have the who's who of Atlanta's history buried there.
And that was Oakland...
Oakland Cemetery.
Oakland Cemetery. Okay, so...
And the point is, they both have wonderful mausoleums for you to look at.
Okay, so there's only been two different cemeteries that I've been to that I thought were absolutely beautiful, okay, that I wasn't afraid of. So this is funny that you're saying go to these cemeteries, and I'm definitely going to visit them. As a little girl, I used to tell my grandmother, I'm afraid of the graveyard. And of course, she would say, you should be afraid of the living and not the dead. Mm-hmm. And my thing was, I can see the living. Like that was my whole thing. Right. 'Cause I do believe, and we'll talk about that in a second too. I do believe, people get lost in transition, or souls get lost in transition. But as a little girl, I remember going to Louisiana, and I thought their cemeteries were like museums. I thought they were so beautiful. Like I was not.
Louisiana has some of the most beautiful cemeteries the country has to offer. Absolutely.
And okay, so and I got a little history lesson, and so everyone in their cemeteries in Louisiana are buried above ground.
Particularly in New Orleans.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Because of the water level.
Right, right. They're below sea level.
Wow. What did you say goes in there so that you don't you're not floating?
The vault.
Okay, so the vault wouldn't protect that?
No, because once you go to dig the grave, you probably go down 4 feet and there's water. If that
oh happens. Wow!
Because they're already below sea level.
Oh, okay, okay. And so then the next one that I went to that was beautiful was the Veterans Cemetery in Arlington, Virginia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That one was beautiful.
Yeah, amazing. And yeah, and very well maintained property. And you know that every veteran, you may know, but the listeners may not, every veteran has that qualifies can be buried in the National Cemetery. Now, if you made that choice, what comes with that is about a 3 to 6 month waiting period, depending on the time of year.
And why is that?
Demand.
Hmm.
Volume, high volume.
So if I said I wanted to be buried in a veterans memorial cemetery, depending on when I died, my body could possibly just be sitting in limbo for 3 to 6 months?
Oh, absolutely. For the one in Virginia now, every state has a veteran cemetery. Mm-hmm. Where the waiting period is not nearly as long, if at all. In Georgia, you don't have a waiting period. It's just a matter of getting on the schedule. But the demand is so high in Arlington that usually there's about, on average, about 3 to 4 months wait
so,
before we can send the
remains. So do they run out of land?
That's a common misconception. We are not threatened with running out of land in the United States.
And why is that?
We simply have enough land. It's math. Now, what one could argue is that if you have 100 acres available, what's the best use of that 100 acres? You want to build a cemetery, or do you want to build a mixed-use development? And more likely, you're going to build a mixed-use development where people can live, work, and play.
Mm.
Nobody's saying, hey, we need another cemetery around here. It doesn't happen. But every cemetery I have talked to, in fact, I talked to one on Wednesday, and he's filling up his developed land, but he says he has another 23 acres to go.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So is there ever a time where they would bury someone on top of someone else?
But depending on the cemetery, that I can see that happening. I've heard of that happening, particularly in rural areas. Mm-hmm. Where it would happen. That's not uncommon. But if and I did the math, forgive me for not knowing exactly, but if everyone in the United States died today, if when I did my math, you could bury everybody in like a portion of Rhode Island. It wouldn't even take up like the entire state of
Florida. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're definitely not threatened with running out of land.
Hmm. What are the from kind of like your initial person that you would meet at a funeral home? So if I was coming in and doing my pre-arrangements, who are the people that I would speak to? What are some of the roles, the different positions, I guess, are being held in funeral homes?
All right. So you definitely have management who are responsible for overseeing the operations and behind the scenes coming up with strategies, you know, for sales and whatnot, you know, for goals. You have a funeral director who, and the funeral director simply means, and that's primarily who you want to ask for. The manager could be the funeral director, but the manager may not necessarily be a funeral director. Why you want to speak to the funeral director is because you now know that the state that this person is practicing in is very, they're being held accountable by the state. Let's put it that way. So if something went awry, this person didn't follow guidelines, you could file a complaint with the state. So I would ask for the funeral director. There's also an embalmer who's sanctioned, who's authorized by the state to embalm bodies. And you may have various other personnel working there, you know, part-timers, people who may be responsible for just tending to the funeral and the family's needs, or the person who may be driving the car. And in a lot of cases, you may have a pre-need counselor who may be on site or who may be off site. And of course, we wouldn't be doing Sean Here Is Becoming if you didn't have the owner.
That's definitely true. Okay, so you said the manager would talk about the sales for funerals? Like, so they have sale, like, do funerals go on clearance, or does it, what is that?
Well, so what happens is, if you are running a business, you should definitely have some financial goals and a budget. And particularly if you are selling a service or a product, your price should include overhead. You should be making enough where you can pay your bills and pay yourself and staff at the same time. So what that means is if you're trotting out your widget for everybody to buy, you just don't throw a price on the widget. Hey, I'm gonna sell my widget for $5. That has, if you haven't done research as it as how much it costs you to make the widget, how much gas you use to go pick up the load of widgets to bring back, how much it costs you to ship the widget, and let's not forget your time involved in doing all this, this planning and preparation involving the widget. That should come with the price, and funerals are no different.
So that's what you would find out when you were shopping around for different funeral homes.
That information is not for the public. That's more for the personnel to know,
But I'm saying you would be able to price
because
compare.
yes, absolutely, absolutely. Well, so I'll give you this. The Federal Trade Commission requires that when you walk into a funeral home and inquire about price, that you be giving a general price list. There are no hidden fees and prices in our business. Now, why they don't regulate the dentist and the doctors and all of that, because I still don't know how much a clone costs at my dentist. I don't know, but they do pick on us undertakers.
Okay, so what's an undertaker?
An archaic word or antiquated word for a funeral director and embalmer.
So it's one, it's this, it's one title for the
It's the
same
same.
person.
Yeah, so when our grandparents were alive, they took pride in knowing the local undertaker. As times change and things evolve, we were giving the title funeral director and embalmer. Also, another term you could use would be a mortician. So it's all in what you prefer. I am licensed as a funeral director. I am licensed as an embalmer. I am licensed to perform cremations. I prefer the term undertaker.
So the person who is directing the funeral could also be the person who embalmed your loved one. So who got,
Correct,
okay,
correct.
so when we're talking about embalming, that are we talking about the entire process? So what we see at the end, so if you have an open casket, what we're looking at it at the end, is that the
Well,
process?
yeah. Part of it, yes. Embalming has three purposes. It is to preserve the remains. And of course, we're dealing with a pandemic. It is to disinfect the remains. And third, it is to restore them to a lifelike appearance. And that's primarily done arterially. And what I mean by that is through the body's arterial system, you will inject embalming fluid in the arteries while simultaneously draining the body of fluids, meaning blood. So after that is completed, then you have another process. You have dressing, cosmetizing, and casting.
Can you take us through those
Which,
processes?
absolutely. So after the person has been embalmed, and you don't necessarily need a license to dress and casket, the person may require some cosmetics. Male and female may require cosmetics. And again, it is just to restore them to a lifelike appearance. In a woman's case, maybe she wore a lot of makeup or maybe not a lot. We try to make everybody look lifelike, not mannequin-like. And so cosmetics are applied, and it's different than the type of cosmetics a woman would wear. Although you can wear you know, Bobby Brown, Mack, and Lacombe. You can wear, we can apply those to the deceased, but we're going for a different look often. And again, we're trying to make them look lifelike, not mannequin-like. And then casketing would be just placing your loved one in the casket and positioning them so that they look comfortable. And the one secret that people don't really realize is what we're doing is, even though the person is laying down, like if you were to come home in your clothes and lay down, your clothes would look bunched up, right? So we're trying to make them look as if they're standing up facing you, although they're laying down. That's our
goal. Wow.
The body has different needs when you're deceased as opposed to when you're living. When you're living, you have blood flowing through you. That blood has oxygen in it. That oxygen is what is going to give you your glow, right? So in the absence of blood running through you, you don't have that glow, and the skin will often look dehydrated. So the cosmetics that we use are not only designed to kind of give the person a little color, but it's also meant to hydrate the skin in the process.
Okay. So you guys, so do you feel like you've done a great job when people say, oh, they look like they were sleeping? Okay.
Yes.
So that's a compliment.
Yes, that's a very high compliment.
Okay. Because I have gone to a funeral as a child, and it looked like he had been dead for years.
Yes. And different cultures have different preferences. I know some cultures, and I won't call them out. I really think that they prefer that their loved ones look dead, deceased, and just void of any color. They won't say it, but I just feel like they do. And there are some other cultures that want them to look like their Easter Sunday shark. you got to research the market you're operating in and cater to that.
Wow.
Because that's who's paying your bills. We're spending a lot of time talking about the deceased, but it's the living who's paying the bills, and that's who you have to make happen, because those are the people that are going to run and down to the coffee shop and tell people about the experience.
Okay, what about the funerals? Because I've seen people, what's the process? Because you said you have the viewing. They always call it, the wake? What is that?
Mm-hmm. A wake is what I would call a miniature funeral. Okay. So you have a viewing, visitation, wake. All right. The difference is, a viewing is we're going to view the remains. You may come in and the funeral director may say your first viewing is at 10 o'clock Friday morning. That means you're coming in to view the remains, inspect them. And if there needs to be any changes, we can make them at that time. As also, it's an intimate time for you to spend with your loved one. A visitation could last for hours. The family may or may not be present for the visitation, but it gives the public an opportunity to come and pay their respects at their leisure and go back, you know, to their day. A wake would be a set time, you know, and usually it takes place in a chapel. It will have a musician and usually an officiant or some type of facilitator to help assist with the flow of it. And usually people will come up and make remarks. There's a prayer and usually a spoken word as well.
So if you do all that, what's the purpose of having a funeral?
To comfort the A lot of times people just feel like they have not gotten their money's worth if they don't have a funeral. And also, you also want to accommodate as many people as possible that are there to support you. A lot of times people can only make one or the other.
Okay. So if you have a wake, you don't necessarily need to have a funeral.
I would say this. You are at liberty to do whatever you want to do. You are not obligated to follow society's methodology and the status quo of how to honor my loved one. A lot of people fall into that routine. You know, they show up at the funeral home. Oh, I need to have a limousine. I need two limousines because Aunt Martha needs to get in. And I often ask myself, you drive yourself every day of the year. Why all of a sudden this day you're unable to drive? And it happens because they've seen a funeral where people had these limousines and they look like the presidential motorcade going to the cemetery and they want the same thing. But they never thought about, wait a minute, you can drive me there and I can save myself $500 for renting a limousine for a few hours.
Yeah.
You know, my cousin Pookie has a third row SUV. We can get in his car and save ourselves $500.
Well, I think again, Jordan, is because of the tradition. Again, this is not a conversation that we're having, you know, during Thanksgiving holidays, Christmas holidays, 4th of July, so when the families get together. We're not having these conversations.
I mean, right. And you know me well enough to know, like you said, I'm an early riser. I told my mom, if something should happen to her and I'm making a decision, that's going to be the first 9 o'clock funeral people go to in their life. You don't always have to have a funeral at high noon.
On a Saturday.
On a Saturday, right. We're going to do this thing at 9 o'clock Wednesday morning and we're going to be, you know, we're going to be done just in time to go still have
breakfast. Oh my God. And you know what? I was going to talk about that too. Cause I've always told my son, listen, I want to be buried in the middle of the week on a Tuesday or Wednesday. Don't wait till Saturday. Mm-hmm. Don't wait for all these people to get into right. town. If they want to come, they will come.
If you're talking about having a burial, the price changes once you have a Saturday service.
It increases or decreases? Increases. And the reason for that being?
Supply and demand, first rule of economics.
Everybody wants to have a funeral on a Saturday.
Absolutely.
That is crazy. Yeah.
And that's the cemeteries. It's not really funeral homes. I've heard about it in some funeral homes, but mainly it's at the cemetery.
It's the cemetery. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So do you have to, what's the, if someone dies on a Sunday, how long mm-hmm. are they able to stay out before they need to be buried?
There's no answer to the question. And the reason why is because it's up to the family to make that decision. Now, if you're asking how long will they last before they start to mm-hmm. decay, again, there's no answer to the question because that's going to be based on the quality mm-hmm. of the embalm. It's so many factors into that. You know, we have to have part two of this. If a family says, hey, you know, we want to send our loved one back to our home country, but we need to wait till everybody, you know, we get our paperwork together, you know, the immigration documents in order and save up enough money or get the money together, and that's going to be about 4 months. Then that's just what we have to do. We have to make provisions for that.
So
every family is different, and we have to serve every family.
So the funeral home will hold that body? And is there correct. A storage fee?
There could you when say when you go ask for your GPL and you walk in, that storage fee should
what's
be
a GPL?
In the GPL. If oh I'm sorry, industry vernacular.
General oh, okay. Priceless,
that they are required to offer.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So, let me ask you, about New Leaf real quick. So New Leaf was your first legitimate venture and you spoke about it earlier as far as, basically bringing funeral services into modern day, world mm-hmm. by making mm-hmm. things convenient via using today's technology, would that have eliminated any of the services in a traditional funeral home?
No. New Leaf is able to offer everything that a traditional brick and mortar funeral home can offer. It just requires that the family understands a couple of things when they walk, you know, when they contract with us or when they ask us to help them out. Number one, we don't have a brick and mortar. So that means if we have to have a face-to-face meeting, we will come up with a mutually agreeable place.
So you're going to talk about funerals in the middle of Starbucks?
Yeah, Starbucks, their home, my office.
Wow. Okay.
Space. You know, I believe it or not, I've
done. So it makes parking. So it's no different from any other modern day consulting business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
But I always tell them the service is not compromised. No one would ever know how we arrange services on the day of your service. Now, if it is that family's desire to.
If it's that family's desire to walk into a brick and mortar and see a fleet of limousines, then that's just where they need to go. You know, I can't compete with that. I'm not trying to compete with that. I have my own model. So again, consumer has choices.
Okay. And so you began operating New Leaf in 2016.
That's correct. That's correct. And I do want to give a caveat. Currently, we are not operating. We had we have an agreement with the state, which is another story for another day, that they took issue with some of the things that we were doing. Nothing was unethical. Nothing was illegal. They just wanted me to give up my trade secret so that they could have a better understanding of my model. And I declined to do so. So in doing so, I just agreed to that. I would restructure, if you will, if it meant getting them out of my business. But yeah, so New Leaf, this is how New Leaf was born. I was working at a funeral home and I had a family member to pass away. I told my supervisor that I was going to go pick up the body and bring it back. And she asked me, when are you all thinking about having the funeral? And I said, probably, you know, on Monday, something like that. And she said, oh my God, can they pick another day? And that rubbed me the wrong way. And so when I went and picked the body up, I found another funeral home that could take care of me. And that guy said, well, I tell you what, you come in, you do everything, and we'll agree on your fee and whatnot. And it worked out good. And I started thinking, wait a minute. So I don't need to go the traditional route to plan a service.
What are some other things that people need to tell you as a funeral director to be prepared? What other information would they need to be prepared for you?
Just have an idea as to what they want to do. Do you want what? And I always start my meetings with, how do you want to honor your loved one? And just for a moment, let's not factor in finances. Just tell me what that looks like. You need to know if you want to have a traditional funeral with a viewing and we're going to a cemetery after that. You need to know if this is going to be a cremation without any type of viewing. What people, a lot of people don't realize is that you can have a traditional viewing and follow that with a cremation. Or if you want to ship this person back to their home state or home country, just have somewhat of an idea. Because if you come to the table and say you don't know, and you again, we talked about those bad apples in the beginning, that professional could lead you down the path that fits them most.
And could be very costly.
Could be very costly.
And you could be any age pre-arranging your funeral.
I mean, yesterday I put my hands on two people who weren't even 40 years old.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, we're definitely dying younger and younger. And then right now, in the wake of this coronavirus pandemic that we're experiencing, There was a girl I read, she was 19 and she committed suicide because it was just too stressful for her. This whole thing, you know, and she just felt that having to be isolated, it was very overwhelming for her, and she committed suicide. So, wow, so you literally can plan your whole funeral and have and just kind of update it annually like you would your will.
You can. Absolutely, you can.
Yep. Wow.
In our last segment, Growing Our Tribe, we shout out another small Black-owned business, as well as a book that has helped us in growing our minds, which in turn grows our business.
I definitely want to shout out New Leaf. I definitely want to shout out all my Black funeral directors that are operating in the Metro Atlanta area. And I just say that because that's where my network is. The entire state is very good at what we do. Let me see. I also want to shout out to Creative Services Printing, Dara Allen's Printing, and Justin Martin Printing. Those are some of the guys that print the programs that Black people have come to highly covet at funerals. And and of course, one of my most trusted colleagues, Atlanta's Premier's Luxury Cars. Atlanta Premier Luxury Cars, they can serve all your transportation needs. It's owned by Lanier Levitt. He has a lot of vehicles that would just make your night memorable, from Sprinters to classic cars.
Well, thank you. I know you have to go. I appreciate your time. I did keep you over the 60-minute mark, but I really appreciate this. Was very valuable information. So thank you again for sharing with us this information.
Definitely. Anytime. I love to come back.
Jordan was not our scheduled guest for this week, but as we all have had to do within the last 2 weeks, we adjusted our schedule to bring you someone who is also on the front lines of this pandemic. He's not a nurse or doctor, but he also is in a compromising field as he cares for those who have lost the fight to this disease. As we were preparing for our conversation, you heard Jordan mention a member of his team has been diagnosed with the coronavirus. He was not immediately seen and had to go to several hospitals before officials would believe him and treat him. He's currently in ICU. Our prayers go out to him, those who he came in contact with, and anyone else who may feel like they have been infected or affected by this virus. We pray healing over your bodies and over this country and abroad. Protect yourself and your families. Stay home. Practice social distancing. A little discomfort or inconvenience can truly save your life. Till next week, this has been another great episode of Sean Henry's Becoming.